Join me, Professor RPG, as I sit down with friends, colleagues, and special guests as we reminisce and discuss role-playing games that left their mark on us. Expect to see all sorts, from Western style to Japanese and even tabletop. So stay a while and listen, and let us trigger those memories of tales long since completed. Relive that fantasy you hold dear, and come along with us, adventurer, on this quest into the past. Welcome to the RPG University. Class is in session, and today we're rolling some dice and learning about the brand new actual play series, Dungeons & Disabled. As always, I am your host, Scott White, also known as Professor RPG, and this week I have the pleasure of welcoming to the university the shining paladin that is always spreading the good word of accessibility in games, the creator and dungeon master of Dungeons & Disabled, Steve Saylor. How's it going, Steve?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks so much for having me, Scott. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
A pleasure to have you on and get to talk to you. We were talking before we recorded of our mutual friend, Jim, how he recommended, and bless you, Jim, I'll have you on soon. And then I've heard nothing but good things from the folks at SGDC, Finn and John and all of them. So a long dream of mine to have you on. So I'm so glad to finally have you on.
And thanks.
Not only to have you on, but to talk about your brand new show that will be starting. Well, technically, at time of airing, will have aired yesterday, the first episode, Dungeons & Disabled. But before we get into the thick of that one, I want to know a bit about your history rolling dice there, Steve. So have you been a big tabletop player for a long time, or is this kind of your first foray into DMing?
So it's not my first foray into DMing, but I remember way back in the early 2000s, I had a group of friends where I was playing. I got introduced to D&D 3.5, and I remember I was playing a druid. It was my kind of my first character, but the thing was is that the group I was playing with, they're awesome, they're great people, love them, but they are kind of a little intense, and it was not the best learning environment for me. They were kind of more of I was actually more afraid to be able to say or do anything, because I was afraid I was going to kind of either be made fun of, or I did the wrong thing. And knowing that, more than likely that probably would not have been the case, but you know, that fear was there because they seemed such an expert of this. And I'm like, I don't know what is this? What is this D20 dice thing that I'm supposed to roll? And I tried the best I could in it, but I was kind of a little too intimidated. So I had kind of stopped playing, but I always enjoyed stuff like board games and stuff like that. So I was always interested in that. And then when I started to kind of start going to conventions, and I was making a podcast back in the day, in college. It was sort of a geek nerdy podcast called This Week in Geek with my buddy Mike Dodd, and the two of us were just kind of focused on everything that nerddom. And so we would start to go to conventions, and there was one convention local to us that we went to that they did a live D&D show called D20 Live, and it was run by a guy named Big Mike, and he basically would have guests from the con basically up on a stage performing or basically doing a one shot, and it was usually a custom one shot that Mike had done and just created for the show. And it was always it was so hilarious, it was so much fun. I remember sitting in the audience and I was like, I love this. I think this is a great idea for a podcast. This is 2011, 2012, by the way. So this is I don't remember if there was ever any D&D podcast at the time that was sort of doing this, but yeah, I was
maybe
like,
Acquisitions Incorporated from the Penny
maybe
Arcade,
I think
guys.
So, but I don't even think I knew about Acquisitions Incorporated at that time. So it was kind of like, oh man, this is such a great idea for a podcast. We need to do this. And thankfully, my co-host Mike and Big Mike, I talked to them afterwards, and I was like, hey, do you want to maybe do this as a show? And Big Mike kind of would be our resident DM. And so we decided to, to make it into an actual show. We had the co-host that we had on the podcast, and it was going to be kind of an offshoot of our main show. And we called it, Terrible Warriors. Well, it wasn't initially called Terrible Warriors because it was play on a word that, not the best sort of politically correct term to be able to say, but, we eventually called it Terrible Warriors, and it's still running to this day. But, essentially what we tried to do was, we try to be able to do a one shot or an adventure every month. And we thought that that'd be the easiest instead of doing like a long form campaign, because, scheduling, mm-hmm. Anything D&D or tabletop related, it's like schedules just go out the window a lot of times. So
that's the true big bad of any board game or tabletop RPG. Yeah. Scheduling conflicts.
1000%. Yeah. So we decided, okay, to make it easier, so that anyone who is available can kind of show up to whatever game, we always wanted to try to make sure we could record locally, because we didn't recording virtually was not even a thing at the time. So we were like, okay, we needed a place to be able to sit down and actually be able to record at a table. And so we decided, yeah, let's just make it easy. We'll do an adventure a month where we only, have to sit and record 4 or 5 hours at one sitting. And then we split them up into hour long episodes, and we spread them out basically every week, so that at least there was always a weekly show, and it just every month was a new brand new adventure. And we would jump into many different types of kind of systems. So it wasn't like, I think we only played maybe actual D&D twice, maybe I ran one of them. That was kind of like one of my first sort of DMing experiences of D&D, because we were given, I think, from Wizards of the Coast, a copy of the starter kit for Lost Mines of Phandelver. And we were just like, okay, let's run a one shot of that. And but we played a bunch of different sort of homebrews, and we played Star Wars Open D6 from our D6 system. We've played D20 systems. I think we even did one that was sort of set in the world of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I think they call it After the Bomb was the system. So we played a whole bunch of RPGs, and unfortunately, I couldn't keep up with the show myself, because I was working and I was getting burnt out by all the stuff I was doing. It was getting pretty bad. So I stopped doing it, and I hadn't really kept up with the sort of the D&D or tabletop world, except for when as probably a lot of folks sort of started getting back into it, was, watching Critical Role for the first time, and in 2015, 2016. And so I was like, okay, I really like this. And I started kind of just watching the show casually. And I really started to get into it. And I was a part of a few home games here and there, but mm-hmm. this is sort of the first big project back since doing Terrible Warriors back in 2012, I think 2015 is when I left.
Oh, so. Wow. Well, first off, props to you and the rest of the crew for trying to do one shots of tons of different systems. I've always wanted to dive in and try multiple systems, but doing one shots in the idea of a podcast schedule,
it was a lot. But we kind of sort of thought, well, if we can at least be able to commit to once a month, because mm-hmm. then that way we could just record, come in, record for 5 hours, split them up into hour episodes. Then at least we know that we're not having to record week to week, which was nice.
Yeah.
And then, being able to sort of, it was a lot of work to be trying to be able to learn new systems. That was actually my original co-host for that. Cause it was sort of our own show, cause Big Mike was a part of it. Then unfortunately he got too busy. And then a few of us also got a little too busy, but my partner in the show, his name was Justin, he really wanted to be able to try a bunch of different systems. And he, took on himself to be able to learn a bunch. And and we all had kind of our own little fandoms that my original co-host Mike, he ran a Ghostbusters campaign because he loved Ghostbusters. I mm-hmm. ran I found this open D6 sort of system, and I DM'd actually my the first time literally DMing was DMing a Matrix one shot.
Oh wow.
I found somehow someone had taken and opened the Open D6 system that, you know, was originally in the 80s and created a version of that in set in the Matrix. And I don't know if I could, if you could still find that PDF somewhere. I think I still have it. I've just kind of held on to it for so long, but it's just that we just tried a whole bunch of different things. Anything we kind of liked or thought would be fun, we just, mm-hmm. just like, hey, this is the system we're going to try out this week.
I love the creativity of nerds. Like,
yeah, I know, right?
Never ceases to amaze me. But speaking mm-hmm. of the creativity of nerds, hey, Steve, tell me about Dungeons and Disabled.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Dungeons and Disabled is a D&D show, but I think we're maybe, you know, open to the idea of different TTRPGs. But essentially, it's where nerdy disabled players come and play Dungeons and Dragons. And where I will DM, I'm the dungeon master of the show. And it really was kind of it's a show about and for disabled players. Like, it's for everybody. Of course, you know, D&D is kind of is open for everyone. And I'm hoping that, you know, people listen. But as far as being able to you know, best represent the disabled community within the space, I thought, yeah, let's make a show that's centered around disabled people. It doesn't necessarily mean that everyone, every character at the table is going to be disabled, but at least every player has to be. And we're starting up, as you said, our first official episode of our first adventure, Escape from Revel's End, aired yesterday. And we've got about 5 episodes of that before we go on to our next adventure. And that'll be essentially kind of, we're doing the similar thing with just a bunch of one shots. And that allows me to be able to still DM, but also have it open for a rotating cast, so I can be able to bring in as many folks who are disabled who wants to join in and come and play.
How what a really cool idea, and like you said, with such an underutilized group and everything to showcase mm-hmm. them, and I can't wait to really dive in and find out about all their characters. But when did kind of this idea of Dungeons and Disabled come to you? Like, how long has this project been in the works for you?
Oof. This idea I have had for about 2.5 years, roughly. I will admit, this is kind of one of those times where I've been making content online since like 2005. This is one of those pieces of content ideas that were, I came up with the name first. And then I was like, oh my God, this is such a cool idea. And then the idea sort of followed after that. But essentially, that's all it was. It was just a name and a basis of an idea of like, okay, let's make a D&D show for disabled people. And I started kind of talking about it to some folks, even some folks in the community. And I was like, I really want to be able to do this right. And then I started, you know, talking with some other folks, and they're like, you know, that were already in the space. And I had asked like, okay, how do you budget for something like that? And they kind of gave me, here's sort of like when players are usually paid whenever they're doing a show. And I was like, oh shoot, okay, I'm going to need to figure out a budget for this and figure out a way to be able to fund it that I can, like, where it's not completely self-funded. Like, cause I was like, I had sort of mm-hmm. money, but not, you know, enough to be able to pay everybody, because that's like a lot based on the budgets that I was hearing. And so the idea kind of just sat there. I was like, okay, you know what, when I get the budget, I'll be able to make this. It was like literally kind of sat in the back of my brain for like 2.5 years, and I keep saying I'm gonna do it, and I just never really actually, like, you know, sat down and I'm gonna make this happen. And it wasn't until the Game Awards last year, so 2023, where I was there, and I actually got invited to an after party that, believe it or not, the Critical Role cast was at. And I got to meet them. And so, like, Matt Mercer had followed me on Twitter randomly mm-hmm. one day, and I don't know why. Still don't know. Like, it was like
one of those hype moment that must have been. Like, oh, I would have, like, yeah. Fangirled so hard if that ever happens.
Oh, 1000%. I was freaking out. I'm like, it was random. It wasn't like it was tied to anything D&D related. It was just sort of just randomly one day I just got a notification, Matthew Mercer's following you on Twitter. I was like, and I never bothered to reply to him. I never bothered to, like, DM him. I like to say, are you sure you want to follow me? I was so afraid of just, you know, like saying anything to him, because I was afraid that that it was an accidental follow. Mm-hmm. And so when I was at this party, so I was like, I kind of like, I was wondering if, like, is he gonna ever, like, recognize me or whatever? Because I know I've done a little bit in the space, but I don't know. Like you never know, especially with just how this, you know, this industry is, of how small or how big it is, that kind of thing. And we kind of like, he was chatting to a group of people, and he was so like gracious to everyone who kind of came up to him. And like, if everything you've heard about what it's like to interact with Matt Mercer, it is exactly that, like, and more. And so I didn't want to disturb it or like, you know, interrupt or anything. And so I just kind of like stood off to the side, and I mean, you know, standing off to the side while I'm also chatting with Laura Bailey and Ashley Johnson, as well. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this is so surreal right now. and then all of a sudden, like, we kind of like, Matt kind of finished conversation. We locked eyes, and he came over straight over to me, and he gave me a big hug. And he's like, Steve, it's so great to finally be able to meet you. And I was like, I don't normally fanboy out, cause I've worked in an industry. I've worked in other industries where, you know, you meet celebrities. They're just people. Like, they just, that's all they care about. That's, you know, you just want to be, you know, be interact as people. And I don't know why I blurted out. It's like, I didn't even think you would know who I was. And he goes, of course I know. Like, you talk about accessibility and all that stuff. And we started having a conversation, and I didn't intend to ask him anything about like D&D related. Cause I don't know. Like, it's like, you know, do you really want to be asked about your day job? Like, it's all the time. And so I didn't plan on it, but I just started asking him, like, hey, I've had this idea for the show. What advice do you have? Like, how do you run, you know, people with disabilities at your table? Because I know he had done that in a few of his campaigns. Yeah. And so I he gave me such great advice and inspiration and just, you know, encouragement for this idea. And it was literally then that I was like, okay, I need to make this happen now. And so after the new year, I just was like, okay, I'm gonna hit the ground running, and I'm just gonna and start building out the show. And here we are today. The first episode's out.
how cool. And I had a brief encounter a couple months ago with Matt Mercer at a press event. And like you said, he is such a genuinely fantastic human being to like me, and so gracious and welcoming to people coming up and talking to him, and like passionate. Like that's one thing with Matt that you really get right away, that you feel the passion and like the interest. Like he gives you his interest and his attention. Exactly. But how cool. Mm-hmm. So you have put this together, and it sounds like a relatively, granted it's been an idea of yours for a long while, but I mean, from the Game Awards to beginning of April, that's not super long time. So what has been some of the biggest challenges of putting together the show in such amount of time? And did you find that it was pretty easy to find a cast, or once things started flowing, it was easy? Or
yeah, actually, so funny enough, it was like, that was the easiest part, was actually getting a cast, because I had some friends who I knew wanted to be in the show, who like work in the accessibility space. So it was an easy just to sort of like, hey, do you want to join in? And they were like, yes, absolutely. There was some that I wanted to reach out and work on work, because we never worked together, but we like knew each other through social media and through like either streaming on Twitch. And so I asked a few of those. And then also as well, what kind of helped kind of like spur this like getting started now was I ran into Siam at MAGFest, and she's, you know, big into the D&D space. Like she's part of, you know, the Wounded Warriors Project, so she does a show through that, but also, you know, she does the show Forgotten Pass. And so it was, and I told her about this idea, and she told me, it's like, I'm disabled, like I have a disability. And I was like, do you want to be on the show? And she's like, abso-freaking-lutely. And it was sort of like, okay, we got, like, once I sort of like had sort of tangential yeses from folks, I was like, okay, that then yes, this is going to be our first group of players. And they were all on board. So that was the easiest. The challenging aspect, it was actually trying to be able to get back into the DM shoes again, because I hadn't done it in so long. So, and like, I learned quite a few things. I mean, like, just from watching other folks do it. And, you know, when you're watching a bunch of different shows, like you kind of pick up certain things as a storyteller. Like I've got, there's a few things from Matt that I take inspiration from Brendan Lee Mulligan, from Abri Iyengar, like just all the kind of like the greats that would be sort of put up on the Mount Rushmore of DMs. And I was like, I knew I didn't want to mimic them, but I wanted to at least find my own way or find my own sort of version of it. So I just basically just took it like as many advice as I could. I even took a course. B. Dave Walters has his own like course of 14 days to be a better DM. And I watched all of that. And I just took so many notes on like how to be able to, you know, like DM better. And I just was getting that those sea legs back in again. And that was, I'd probably say would probably be the challenge of it. Cause you know, trying to be able to run a campaign and let the players do their own thing, but also yes, anding everything. It was like, whew, okay, I gotta be a little bit more loose with the with the story and making sure that, you know, the players are very much like they're in control, and but also, you know, keep them on rails as best as possible.
Yeah, kind of along those same lines, from one DM to another, how quickly did your players veer off track and you have to start coming up with things on the fly? Because I have found that within about 5 to 10 minutes of a session starting, something will go completely different than I was expecting. So I'm kind of curious, how quickly did yours kind of veer in a different direction than you had anticipated?
I will say it took a little bit longer than that, because I one of the things I learned, I read this, actually Jim had given me a book called, I think it was like The Lazy Dungeon Master, and one of the things that I read in there was, hey, as long as you can have a strong beginning, and so I purposely like kind of almost in a way scripted out this entire beginning, and it was because I knew that I had players that were new to D&D. That was the thing too, is that I had some that were experienced, some that were experienced in TTRPGs but never played D&D before, and then there were some that like I've never played it before. So I knew I had to kind of at least be a little bit on rails for them, just to kind of get them, you know, used to here's how to be able to like role play, and here's how to be able to use the dice in your characters. I already had like a session zero with them, so they knew what their characters were going to be like. Or at least just building their characters, but we never actually did like a full on, like as a group before recording, like just sit down and play, because we had like limited time. So it was actually more like episode 3 is where things started to kind of like veer off into like, oh, okay, I need to figure something out. And then it was like by episode 4 or 5, it was like everything was off the rails, and in the most fun way, but also like in the best way, because I was happy enough that I had the world that they were all in, and I had all the, at least as much of the rules of the world that they were in, because of course, like Escape from Rebel's Land, like basically it's like they're in a prison, so they're like the whole point of the adventure is like you got to escape from the prison. So as long as I can create the prison system and, you know, the locations and everything, I had some help with some pre-made sources in some of the official published adventures of D&D. So that kind of helped out flesh out a little bit easier, but I sort of customized a lot of that to homebrew it, to make it fit with my adventure. But so I was like, I was already prepared for things to kind of go off the rails. So I was like, okay, you know what? Hey, I got the world. You just tell me where you want to go in this world, and I'll figure it out as I go. And that was when everything pretty much went off the rails.
Love it, love it. Now I'm curious. The current adventure is Escape from Rebel's End, and I'm not super. Is Rebel's End an established like in Forgotten Realms thing, or is this homebrew stuff? Like how much of the campaign is homebrew in terms of setting and stuff?
So actually, Revel's End is part of one of the adventures from the Frostmaiden D&D adventure. So there is like a story in there that actually is free to get off of D&D Beyond, because that's where I got I was looking through there and looking through some of the adventures of when I wanted to run and sort of homebrew. And there was a free adventure called Prisoner 13. Essentially, it was you basically, as an adventuring party, you are trying to be able to find Prisoner 13 at Revel's End, and you're not like you're kind of like you're just trying to get into the prison. You're free to kind of like move around and try to find prisoner 13, but you know, you can also sneak in as well if you wanted to. But I homebrewed it where instead of the adventuring party just trying to get to the prison, they start off the adventure like they're prisoners. Like they are put in there for, you know, whatever reason. I'm trying not to spoil it, but there's definitely like reasons as to why they're there, and some that are you know whatever, and that was kind of where the homebrew started. So essentially, and prisoner 13 is part of that. So yeah, that whole Revel's End, like, and they have like an entire like they broke down all the rooms and all the prison cells and all that stuff, so that really helped flesh out a lot of the world building for me.
Very cool. Yeah. So I want to hear about, you talked a bit about Sam joining your cast.
Yeah.
What about the rest of your cast? Who all do you have playing in this first adventure of Dungeons Disabled?
Yeah, so I have a pretty eclectic group of folks, which I'm very happy about. So hello, it's Colo. She's a Twitch streamer from the UK. She actually, I always brag about her because she's like the one of the few people that I know that just like, she plays video games with her feet. She uses the adaptive controllers. Mm-hmm. She has very limited movement in her hands. And so I love bragging about the fact that she basically played the entire Mass Effect trilogy with her feet. She's a great friend. So yeah, Colo. We have also Mike the Quad, who is also a Twitch streamer and is really great at first person shooters, but also is a disabled streamer. And then I have also Morgan Baker, who is the accessibility lead over at EA, and Grant Stoner, who's a disabled accessibility journalist and has like columns at like IGN, Wired, so basically it's a pretty well a sort of different varied group, as it were, and they all play great together.
Very, very cool. What have, obviously I don't want to know of, I will leave it to the cast to introduce and share their characters when you watch the show. What's been kind of the funniest or the most enjoyable aspect to the party, or like what can people expect, listeners expect from the dynamic among the party?
Ooh, that's a good question. I will say that at first you kind of like, as you know, new party members and adventurers, they're trying to figure each other out. So at first it's kind of like a, I don't know you, do you know, like, do you know me? Like, what are we kind of doing kind of vibe? And then it started like, and then it starts opening up. There's a bit of humor in there, but there's also like, there are definitely some serious dramatic moments. So it's kind of got a combination of a bunch of different sort of dynamics. But once they kind of got comfortable with each other, it was pretty, fun to kind of see them sort of play things out, especially like in episode two, when they start to kind of figure out what's going on, and they're like, and it's just seeing them kind of like, I just love seeing them in kind of interact and sort of figure things out as they go. But yeah, I'd say like it's if those are expecting like a very okay, this is completely comedic, it's you know, there's a bit of humor in that, but not a huge amount. But there is definitely, if you do prefer like sort of more of a dramatic kind of serious kind of a game, there's definitely quite a bit of that too. And so yeah, it's just a pretty, I guess, well balanced, I guess, dynamic, if that makes sense.
Oh, cool. So kind of jumping along that train of thought, what would you say is kind of like the breakdown, or like what have you made and the players made Dungeons and this Escape from Revel's End into? Is it like pretty like balanced with in terms of combat and storytelling, or like is it heavier like puzzle solving? Like what's kind of the balance of the gameplay that you're putting in front of your players, or that you yourself like to run?
Well, actually, I kind of am open to pretty much any type of session or gameplay, because I love kind of all aspects of that. I love, you know, when there's just, it's very role play heavy, or it's combat, or, you know, it's puzzle heavy. But one of the things that I had asked the players during our character building session zeros was, what kind of a game do you prefer? Like, do you prefer role playing? Do you prefer just combat, or puzzles? And pretty much a majority of them were focused, they like the idea of role playing. So there's a lot of definitely a lot of that. There is some combat. So there, but if you're expecting, you know, a heavy combat adventure, definitely this is not it. But so it's very much a role playing. I would say probably out of all of them, it's very like there's probably not that much puzzle solving in this one. It's just more of, you know, it's a very much like a hey, you gotta get something, but you gotta escape from the prison too. So yeah,
there you go. What has been the biggest surprise or joy for you coming back into the DM's chair after being away for so long?
Ooh, very good question. For me, it's kind of getting back into storytelling again. I love storytelling. It's probably like the games I like, if I'm playing just video games, that's the games I sort of gravitate towards. Anything that's like a action adventure or a very narrative heavy type game. It's something that I, as a kid, I used to read a lot, and I would read like a ton of novels and books as a kid. I would remember going to the library a lot as with my mom and my brother, and we would just, you know, every pretty much almost a weekly basis, just go and pick up like a new set of books. And I've always loved it, and I always kind of would write like little stories, whether short stories, or I've actually written a full on like I used to podcast a novel back in the day. It's not great. It's honestly, like, if I look back now, it's not the best. But it was my first, you know, foray into writing a novel, so I gotta start
somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. So I was and then I wrote a bunch of different short stories that I still like to this day, that I put together in a collection. And but I hadn't had the opportunity to be able to do any storytelling for a long while. I think probably the last time, like the last story I wrote was probably 2015. So it has been a long while. So jumping back into the DM chair again, I had all these different sort of like nuggets of different ideas that I would love to be able to tell stories in, whether that's, you know, in a novel form or in a TTRPG setting. It was always like, I always kind of kept notes of everything just, you know, just in case. And I remember one of the notes I had, I was looking through them as I was trying to figure out kind of what first adventure would I want to be able to create. Cause I started working on that before I even sort of locked down the players. Cause I wanted to, you know, try to figure out, okay, what story can I tell? Just in case if I have to be like, okay, tomorrow you're starting this campaign. And I had this idea that I was like, I wonder, I've never really seen a lot of adventures that dealt with a prison break before. So I wonder maybe that is something I can do. And yeah, just sort of, and everything kind of like figured out from there. So that has been the honest joy of getting back into the DM chair, is being able to tell a story and be a part of telling a story with the players too. Cause I mean, yeah, like as a DM, sure, you're kind of setting up the world, but it really is definitely the players who want to tell the story. And yeah, there's a bit of, you know, as a one shot is, it's definitely a little bit more DM storytelling focused than necessarily player focused, but there is a bit of that in there. And there's definitely some players that kind of add a lot to the story that I didn't even think of. And that's kind of been the most fun to discover, was seeing a player integrate their story as part of the game, and it just sparks an idea in my head that, oh, this will be good for this, and I can integrate that. Like, that to me has been so much, like, that has been so much fun of the whole thing, was like seeing what the players are doing. I'm like, oh, I've had like, it's a bunch of different nuggets of ideas that I had in my head of like, okay, how can I sort of integrate this part or this bit piece here and there, and then like a player or a group of players will say something, and I'm like, that's it, that's what I need to sort of, that's the hook to get that into this. So it's been so much fun. It's scary, it definitely is stressful, for sure, being a DM again, but I so far, I mean, hey, it's up to the, you know, the audience. If I hope y'all enjoy the story that we got. But hey, if you don't, there's always the next adventure. So you don't have to, you're not stuck into a long form campaign with this. Like, hey, if you didn't like this one, hey, there's gonna be another one around the corner. So
touching on a bit what you said, like those aha moments and finding players, those nuggets that they drop. I love, that's probably one of my favorite things about being a dungeon master is, those little offhand comments or remarks that maybe they came up with just on a drop of the hat or something, but that you realize, oh, I can put this in here, or oh, what if I take this idea I previously had and tweak it so it applies more and makes this person's or this character's backstory more meaningful. I love those moments.
Oh yeah,
like those joint storytelling avenues that you can pursue. And I'm curious, another aspect is that I love about being a DM is that aha moment with new players. As a longtime player and kind of returning to this and running a game for some new players who haven't really dove into the hobby before, have you seen that kind of aha moment with them where it clicks in their mind that I can do kind of anything?
Totally. Especially because I would say probably Grant and Morgan are probably and a little bit of Mike too. They're like the newer players to D&D, and I mean they've had the experience with it, but not really kind of like if like they're like, oh, I always wanted to try it, but they never had a chance to jump in. And it's been so great being able to talk to them, because we recorded the first half of the adventure like several weeks ago. And we just finished the last half of the adventure, this past weekend, actually, just before, our first episode premiered. And in between that time, I've heard from the players, and they were like, I absolutely love this. I am so hooked into it now. I want to play more D&D. I want to jump into this. Like, it was such a joy hearing from them. Like, I am now hooked. I want to find a bunch of friends and play this on create a home game. And I was just so happy to hear that they really, really enjoyed their time. Cause you know, as new players, you can either go one or two ways. Either they're like, nah, you know what, this is not for me, or, you know, I'm too scared. I first started playing 3.5, I was like, I'm this is a little too much. But like I was glad they went the other way. We're like, oh, this is so much fun. I love being able to just figure things out and you know, letting my like imagination kind of run wild. And like, yeah, there's, you know, certain aspects of their character that like are not, you know, fully into the campaign. They don't deal with everything that's in their backstory, but I think that they really just enjoyed being a part of the story. And it was just so great just to kind of hear that. And the good thing is that with the show too, is that I have it open where that essentially, like, because it's even though it is a rotating cast of players, doesn't mean that I can't invite those players back. So there's some that I'm like, that I know that are really interested and want to be able to keep playing. So I'm definitely going to be bringing them back for sure to let them either create a new character or, you know, keep playing the same one that they created before. So it's just been so much fun.
Did you warn the new players at least that if they got hooked on this hobby that they better have room for dice? Like,
yes,
the unhealthy obsession with collecting and hoarding dice.
Yes, 1000%. Yeah, they understand the addiction. But you know, as you know, as folks in this space, you know, you do become like a little hyper fixated on a new hobby. Yeah, you start to kind of buy all the things. And so I think that I haven't heard if they're going to be buying a bunch of dice or not. But I have warned them that it is definitely going to be an expensive hobby.
And it doesn't help that they've made dice so pretty nowadays.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Some of the dice at PAX.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I picked up actually a set actually last year, PAX 2023. They actually sold a set of dice. And I bought that, and it's just like, it's a gorgeous kind of like red sort of gem with like a white lettering on or white numbers on it. And it fits that vibe. And I picked up a bunch of a metal dice from Dice Dungeons.
Yeah.
And it has like a metal kind of like purple sort of color, and it has like a bright white numbers on it. Cause I'm very much of like, I need to have dice that has a good high contrast. Cause that's for me specifically. And I also bought, like, I was like, you know what, heck, why don't I just buy a dice tray from them too? So I went and bought the dice tray that actually came in handy for quite a different reason. So because we actually recorded a special thing at PAX too for Dungeons and Disabled. That's that actually will be coming out in April as well. So,
oh, how cool. Yeah, one of the stalls, I can't remember the vendor, but they had all these gorgeous dice, and one of the it was the last set they had. They had actually cast like small versions of the One Ring from Lord of the Rings with like Elvin on them. And it was like, it had the golden ring inside with like little droplets of like red. So it kind of looked like it glowed. And they had them of the standard six set of dice. And like with all the lights and the showcase and everything, it was like, I was speaking to the to Seth Macy from IGN, who I was checking him out with.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like we're looking at wedding, like engagement rings, like with all the light shining down and the clear cases and the way he was presenting. It's like, now this one is, it's a sharp resin with a impact core or high liquid core. And if you shake it, it's like, I feel like I should be proposing right now. Like I know, like right? I'm ready to propose. They're gorgeous and the colors and it blows my mind how far dice technology has come. Like the creation of dice has come in the short 10, 15 years, even 5 years. It's nutty.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like I have a friend of mine.
So
who,
good.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who just like started making dice on her own, and it's actually like it's a D20 loves dice, and it's like I got like a set, like a I think I got just a D20 from her, and it's like she's loving basically just casting resin in different sort of styles, and it's absolutely like it's so great just to like I haven't jumped into the I need a big, huge bag in order to be able to put all my dice in. But I do have a bag, and actually is years ago, a friend of mine who actually was one of the little group of friends who got me in or into D&D for the first time, got me a knitted Jane hat from Firefly. And okay. I've been using that as my dice bag for years. And so I've got a dice bag, but you know, it's probably not as like, we're not talking like Laura Bailey, big huge bag of dice.
I think she's in the top 1% of dice bags.
Probably, yeah.
So impressive. I have a little Avatar The Last Airbender bag that I've actually made into like my emergency or my really quick disperse like Dungeons and Dragons bag. So if I ever wanted to like run a quick game, I have like a couple of varied colors of poker chips. I have a bunch, like a set of six dice, some dry erase markers, so like if I ever need to, it's like, hey, you want to play a quick game, I can quickly bust those out. It's like, okay, here, you're the red chip, blue chip, whatever. These are the red ones. Like I saw it on a YouTube like of a teacher that had a Dungeons and Dragons club at their school that ran it, and that's what he would just bring. It's like not actual miniatures, but with just this pouch of an all-encompassing quickly set up D&D game, so you can do it one shot, and it's like, that's such a good idea.
I love that, like an emergency D&D bag.
Exactly. That's never know when you'll be stranded in the highway or something and you just want to play some Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, I love that.
So I just keep that in my car. But yeah, it's a little Avatar The Last Airbender bag that I got from the Avatar TTRPG Kickstarter that came out a year ago.
Oh wow, I love that. Oh, that's such a great idea.
Such a cool idea.
I need to do that, like, because I always, like, I did actually used to carry like a just a D20 in my coat pocket, like just in case, you know. But it's like, yeah, having that sort of like little, like a little bag of like, actually, yeah, I could probably do that, because I love those like little tiny notebooks that you can be able to get, like a like field notes kind of size, like those kind of notebooks. So, and then weeks ago I was like, I found like just a bunch of like little like, you know, those like golf pencils that are like super small, but they're like fully sharpened. Like I'm like, oh yeah, I could basically just get one of those, put like a few pencils in there, and then put some like dice in a bag, and that'd be like my emergency sort of D&D kit. I love that idea so much. Okay, I need to steal.
And
that.
I feel like, I think it was in the Magic, because Magic the Gathering did Dungeons and Dragons set, and I believe that they made like normal card sized monster sheets. So throw a couple of those in your notebook. Boom, you have some encounters.
That's right. Yeah, I guess I could do. Oh man, that's such a perfect idea. Oh, I'm stealing that. I'm gonna totally need to use that.
Right? It's so brilliant. Just like a couple things, throw in. Like, okay, doesn't have to be a big one, but you want to roll some dice. Sweet, here you go.
Wow, that's that's so perfect. Yes,
it's so okay. good.
I'm already now thinking. I'm like, I'm gonna include this in my bag. Include this in my bag, and it's just gonna, I'm always gonna have it with me. I love this.
Right, and like throwing a couple sets of dice just in case. But yeah, you're set. Like imagine like just popping that out at like a PAX table in the Western or something. Be like, hey, wanna have an encounter real quick?
Actually, it's funny. So, like, speaking of, yeah, like of random encounters. So, yeah, as I mentioned before, this is definitely side tangent, but you know, helping to also promote the show too. So, we did actually record a one shot, like a literally just an hour one shot for the show. But it was actually a play test of a one page RPG that I made like a year ago. I never had a chance to have anyone play test it, but it was like, you know what, I have this new show, why not just sort of give it a try? And it was a very last minute idea of like, maybe I could just record something at PAX. And all I needed for that was literally just a deck of cards and a six-sided die, because I'll just say briefly, it's called Pistols and Powers. And it's literally you become a it's set in the Old West, and you're an Old West legend, but with superpowers. And the way you play is literally just the rules of blackjack. But you can roll a D6 dice, that's your superpower die. And you can add or subtract that number to your final hand. And it was so much fun just to be able to have like, yep, okay, here's the PDF, here's the deck of cards, whatever, here's your dice, and just, you know, sit down and play. And it was such a quick and easy sort of setup. And I love those kind of things. I love like the spontaneous sort mm-hmm. of ideas of those things. And that to me, because there's a lot, like, yeah, you can plan out a full adventure, you can spend weeks or, you know, whatever, like months to just planning out this entire world, and it's fun to be able to like to discover and everything about that world and story, but sometimes it's just fun just to, you know, pick up and play. And yeah. And I love that, because it's just like, it just let your, like, you're just in it for fun. Like, you're not in it for like, we don't need to make like, you know, high fantasy like art here. We can just like, we can just have fun with it. And mm-hmm. and that's what I love about that, like those kind of like sessions.
On the topic of just having fun, do you think nat one moments or nat 20 moments make for the funnest, like best moments?
Ooh, great question. Yeah. I think it depends. I think for like, they both do. They both can have fun moments, yeah. because nat 20s, of course, like can kind of give you like the ultimate like hero moment of whatever it is you're trying to do, or you know that you find that one thing that no one else wouldn't have been able to find unless you had a very high, it was a very high DC and was able to make mm-hmm. it. But I think also nat ones can be funnier. I prefer the humor of nat ones than necessarily mm-hmm. being like, because the one thing actually I do remember from that time, like when I first tried to play the D&D 3.5, was that I was so afraid to be able to get a nat one, because all I was told was that nat 20 means a critical success and nat ones are critical failures. Like, you screwed up. Like, you, if you roll mm-hmm. nat one, you absolutely screwed up. And I was so afraid to be able to roll them that I forgot, like I never got the idea until watching some like other folks play and, you know, and seeing kind of the shows, and that when they were like, nat ones can be hilarious. It can like, it's never, I love when DMs sort of like make it as like, it's not a nat, like a natural, like it's a failure, but it can be a hilarious failure or something that you didn't even intend. Like one time, one of my favorite nat one moments that just turned into like one of the fun, like the most fun moment in the game was, it was actually during when I DM'd the Matrix campaign for Terrible Warriors, and one of the players, like they were in this sort of like a lobby area, and they were trying to be able to like, there was some like fight or sneak past some guards, and you know, some of them, you know, the stealth checks didn't mm-hmm. work, so then they're now fighting in them, and one of the players was in the, you know, was driving the getaway car, and she was like, okay, can I just drive up to the front door and just, you know, start like kind of like shooting and maybe like use the car to kind of use for cover. And I was like, yeah, sure, go for it. And she rolled a one, and I was like, okay, this is gonna be this is gonna be a fun, hilarious moment. So I like, it, basically I described it, she, instead of, you know, rolling up and, you know, and just then firing her, like she basically just drove straight into the lobby and really like at full speed and destroyed all the guards, but then crashed into the elevator door And the way I had set up the building was that if, you know, like as a fail safe for like a security feature was that each floor, it like each elevate, like each floor for the elevators had like a an explosion, like an explosive device on each floor. So she hit the elevators and it just triggered the explosions for each floor. And it just made this massive fireball as they were kind of, it kind of pushed them all out, like threw them outside the building. And it was just like, it was such a fun moment. I didn't plan on doing that. It was just sort of like, let's go for it. Let's do it. And like the players had no idea that that was the case. And it just, they it was just so much fun. And like, I just love turning that it was a absolute critical failure. Like it did not do what she wanted to do, but it turned into like a really fun, even like it's sort of almost heroic moment, even though they didn't necessarily intend to have that happen. So yeah, you know, it took a while for them to be able to climb up to the top of the building, but they couldn't use the elevators anymore. But hey, it was kind of a fun like action movie moment kind of deal.
Yeah. I love that. This is one thing that I love about D&D and or like tabletop RPGs in general, and that I think a lot of people that haven't experienced a good game like this don't quite understand until they sit down and play. It's like, these are just made up silly moments, but they are like those memories that stick with you. Like those, sure. I have so many formative memories and moments that I attribute to my D&D group, or those funny moments that we can all look back on and laugh. It's like, it's that bond you share with your players and your table, and that you can just look back on and love, that I love so, that makes me love this hobby so, so much.
Exactly. And that's the thing too, is that if you, and even for me, for the show, there was some like natural ones that happened with some of the players, but with the rules of the game, a nat one is a critical failure. Like and like what you're trying to be able to do doesn't happen. And yes, there can be moments, especially like, you know, if you're facing the big bad and you try to be able to do a thing and it fails. And obviously, you know, it like, especially like in a tense moment, that could absolutely feel like a, oh, I screwed up kind of moment. But I feel like that a good DM or good GM essentially could take that nat one and and figure out a way that, yes, it's a failure. You'll not be able to do what it is you want to do. But being able to like make sure that it's not their fault. It just happened, you know, it's just a dice roll. Like the player doesn't have any control over that. They roll the dice and it happens. And so like, I never want to make a natural failure feel like that it is their fault. That it is like, they're the ones who screwed up the entire story or moment for the players. It's just a thing that happens. And yeah, it can turn into some hilarious moments, but it can also, turn into some like, oh no, like players died kind of moments too. Like, and that can happen. And yes, you have to kind of leave room for that. But like, you have to, like, you make the natural failures not be their fault. But when they roll a natural 20, it's 100%. They're the hero in that moment. And I think that is how a game like that should be run, because it's not about like, you screwed up, this is your fault, now everything is gone to shit because of you. It's if any DM or GM makes a player feel that way, then you should leave that table right like immediately. And so especially with new players like who's never played D&D before in the adventure, like it was. I never wanted them to feel like to be afraid of that, of hitting that one. It's like, hey, if they hit that one, it's going to be hilarious. Whatever's going to happen. And it kind of helps sort of remove the stigma of a critical failure in that sense.
Yeah. Great way to put it. Great way to put it. But like, so it sounds like you have finished recording the first saga, the first adventure, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have. Yep.
What do you hope? Like, what is your dream for Dungeons and Disables? Like, what's your, like, what do you hope this is when 10 years from now? What do you want Dungeons and Disables to be, still to have been, or like, what do you want its lasting legacy to be?
Oh, wow. That's an amazing question. I would say, the thing for me that I would love to be able to like the main mission of the this show is to highlight and showcase disabled representation, not only within the space but also within the worlds that we create, and showcase that people with disabilities can play these games too. And if you are able to accommodate for people with disabilities, you can, like, it could be so much fun. Like, and I've even learned myself of how to be able to during this, even just recording this first adventure, like how to be able to properly make it as accessible and as comfortable as possible. Like Morgan Baker, like she is deaf, and so we had to figure out a way to be able to make sure that captions were available to her. So we use Google Meets essentially to kind of be that, and she also had the transcription in Google Chrome to kind of add that, you know, add extra whatever Google Meets couldn't provide. But then also, and this is something I had to learn too, like, because I had planned on, you know, recording the entire 4-episode adventure within one sitting, because I was like, I didn't want to have them sort of sit for a long while and play. But as it turns out, as I was trying to be able to do that, you know, some of the players were like, hey, my brain fog, like I can't think of my feet anymore. I also, like, you know, they ran out of spoons. So I'm just like, oh, okay, then yeah, you know what, let's split up the adventure. And I think I'm going to do that going forward, being like, okay, let's split it up into 2 recordings instead of just 1 to make it a little bit easier. So it's more about being able to allow and highlight and allow disabled players to be able to play at the table, but also highlight how you can be able to make, let's say, just D&D, for example, how you can be able to highlight and showcase disabilities within D&D that is not like, oh, you only have one leg, and oh, okay, but, you know, using magic, you can basically have your second leg, and so you're perfectly fine. It's not about doing that. Oh, excuse me, cough. Sorry about that. It's not about using magic to fix a disability. It's about using the rules within D&D to adapt to their disability. And there are so many resources that are available that I've used and been able to add a lot of D&D mechanics into because a lot of people with people with disabilities, our superpower is adaptability. We can adapt to the world around us no matter what. And sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's extremely hard, but it's something that we are just, you know, we learn how to do very quickly either from birth, if you have a disability, or you become disabled later in life. That's the first thing they basically learned is adaptability. And I find that being able to adapt to D&D to work within the rules that's there and bend a few things here and there to make it more acceptable, and, you know, and highlighting you can have a disability and still be able to play as a character and have like a fully fleshed character. That is what I want to be able to highlight. So basically, the TLDR of it all is, I would love for this show to basically be seen as a great representation for players and characters with disabilities, and highlight that within D&D or within a TTRPG space. And I hope that, you know, and we can also have some fun and tell some great stories along the way, because we all got great stories to tell, and disabled people just as much. So that is, I hope, like the legacy, like regardless of like whether it's, you know, the players or myself that like become known for this show. I don't, to be honest, I don't care even about, like, even though it's my show, I don't care about even myself being highlighted in it. I just want to be able to know how the legacy of, like, yeah, Dungeons and Disabled, it was a great representation of people with disabilities in the hobby that we all love.
Absolutely love it. And what advice or resources, like, if, let's say, the listener has some disabled friends that they want to incorporate and bring into their campaign or start a campaign with, what are some tips or advice to make that entry or to the accessibility? What are some resources that you would recommend that you found helpful With this first adventure that you would recommend to folks?
Sure. Actually, if folks want to be able to take a look, there actually is, I am starting to post, because I have a website for the show, dungeonsanddisabled.com. If you go there, there actually is an accessibility resource guide that I'm constantly going to be updating with whatever resources I find. But the ones that I've been using so far, Jennifer Krishner has like a great Google Doc of just how to be able to, you know, add accessibility in tabletop gaming. I found a great Tumblr post of a list of disabilities and D&D mechanics for those disabilities. Like one of the ones, my favorite ones I found from that was two of my players wanted to have chronic fatigue as one of their disabilities. And I was like, okay, how do you sort of add that into the game? And luckily enough, it was, I looked it up on this list and it was there. And it was basically the mechanic is okay. After every long rest, the player rolls a D20. If they get a 2 or lower, then they get a point of fatigue for the day. And they can't remove that unless they have another long rest. And it's just like, it's something as simple as that. It's just kind of like really adds a lot to the game, and it just added a whole ton of like great sort of ideas within disabilities for there. So there's that. And then also I have two players that have wheelchairs, and so of course the combat wheelchair module created by Mark Thompson, and if you listen to Critical Role, like Matt used it in campaign 2 and for one of his NPCs, and it was it's great. So yeah, if you want, like, check out there's amazing resources. Definitely Jennifer Critcher is Critchmer basically has like an entire great sort of like launching point. But if you want to go to dungeonsanddisabled.com, I have a list of all the stuff that has been, I've been inspired by, and you know, I've gotten ideas from just how to be able to make games a little bit more accessible.
Awesome. And that's with and spelled out.
That's and spelled out. Yes. A-N-D. Yeah.
Perfect. I have to say, I love the merch design that you put together. It is so awesome. I love seeing you rock it at PAX and everything. Absolutely love it. I might snag myself a mug.
Oh yeah, no, please do. Yeah. So those who don't know, yeah, there is a store. We have a session zero, so it's like only 4 items right there. There's a T-shirt, a hoodie, a leather jacket, bomber jacket, and then like a coffee mug. I have like 24 plus years of graphic design experience, so okay, like I was very happy to be able, like when I was putting that together, I'm like, oh, okay, this is a fun little logo here. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's very, very cool. But so, so excited, Steve, to get to listen to Dungeons and Disabled and everything you're putting together, and just your constant shouting from the rooftops and pushing developers and everyone to be better, thinking about accessibility and how to make their games more approachable for everyone, because games should be for everybody. And especially this tabletop, the RPG experience, being able to tell, everyone has stories to tell, like you said. And thank you for creating an avenue that an underrepresented community can get to telling their amazing stories as well. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really do appreciate that, the kind words. So thank you so very much. It's great. It's great to hear, but also it's like I'm a part of a great community of amazing folks in the space, whether it's just accessibility in video games or now as I'm jumping into the TTRPG space. There's some great folks in the community, and I'm just happy to be a voice as part of it.
Fantastic. But we are coming to the end of another episode of RPG University. As just once more, Steve, thank you so, so much for taking time out of your busy editing schedule, preparing for Dungeons and Disables to talk about this fantastic new show that people can go and listen to right now, the first episode. But where can people find their new show? Where can people find you on the internet? What do you have? What else do you have cooking, if anything? Go ahead and plug everything and anything.
Yeah, sure. You could definitely check out the show, dungeonsanddisabled.com. That's disabled with, spelled Disabled with the DS at the end, dungeonsanddisableds.com. You can be able to subscribe to the show. It is a podcast, so it is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcasting service. We'll be doing a new episode every Wednesday. And if you want to be able to kind of watch along and have be a part of the watch party, you can watch it live on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Steve Saylor. We'll have a little bit of like a pre-show and then also an after show where I get to have some of the cast on, and we'll talk about what happened in the episode. And you can be able to watch that at like every Wednesday at like 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but all the episodes will air on podcasting services at like 7 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday. And you can be able to follow me. I'm pretty much at Steve Saylor everywhere now, except for TikTok. For some reason, I can't change that. So I'm Blind Gamer Steve over there. But I'm just come follow me, and hopefully we'll have some fun.
Awesome. And about how long are episodes looking like they're gonna run?
They're about roughly just over an hour. The good thing is that if you watch, you're not gonna have to spend like 4 or 5 hours for each episode, where I kept it small for those who are a little bit of like neurodivergent and can't, it's a bit harder to be able to concentrate on a 3-4 or multiple hour podcast. So yeah, it's just basically they're just over, I think probably the max is like maybe an hour 20, an hour 30 minutes kind of thing. So
perfect. Well, after the first adventure, I would love to have you and maybe some of the cast on to hear about some of the shenanigans that you all get up to, and a deep dive into the adventure.
Sure.
And how your prison break goes. But thank you to each and every one of you who's listened today. Be sure to rate and review us on your preferred podcast services. I'd really appreciate it. If you have an RPG you would like us to feature on an episode, tweet at @_RPGUniversity with the hashtag RPGU with your suggestion, or you can share your own favorite RPGs and memories directly with me on Twitter @ProfessorRPG. As always, everybody, stay safe, stay healthy, be kind to one another. May the dice be ever in your favor. Class dismissed.